So technically, I still don't have a title for today. There may be one post-sermon, but for now, these are the things that I wanted to share with you. So on this weekend, where a day is set aside to honor mothers specifically and women in general, I'm reminded of how Adonai has honored some women through Scripture. There is the Proverbs 31 woman and the lofty aspirations. Keeping in mind, I didn't say expectations, but aspirations, meaning things that you are to seek. In verses 10 and 11, it says, "Who can find a capable wife? Her value is far beyond that of pearls. Her husband trusts her from his heart, and she will prove a great asset to him." So, for the men in the room, you're blessed beyond all belief. Some wives may even say, "You don't deserve me." Needless to say, these are the words of Adonai because he established the dynamic, the relationship between man and woman. And then those verses in Proverbs 31, verses 10 and 11, are followed by what this woman does. She is one of action and embodies the very essence that Adonai has established within her. And I'm not going to read all the verses, but I'll give you a summary of what she does. She works. She procures. She is like a merchant. She rises. She considers. She gathers. She sees. She puts. She reaches her hand out. She has no fear. She makes. She speaks wisely and she watches. Those are all within the verses of Proverbs 31, starting in verse 12. So you have a list of action. Everything there was a verb. It was action. She makes, she does, she hears, she listens, she procures, she rises, she considers, she gathers, she sees. And thus the Proverbs 31 woman and the verses that I, in essence, summarized and shared with you what she does conclude this way. Many women have done wonderful things, but you surpass them all. Charm can lie, beauty can vanish, but a woman who fears Adonai should be praised. Give her a share in what she produces. Let her works speak her praises at the city gates. How can anyone fully measure up to such great expectations? As these verses are usually presented and thus understood, this is the benchmark for a woman to meet. This is the standard by which women will be judged. Lofty, to where in our own minds, in your own mind, likely you might have said, "Well, I'm nowhere near close to that." That's why I said it's an aspiration, not an expectation. It's something to aspire to. It's something that is within you and that you are capable of doing. I'm reminded of Deuteronomy 30, when God speaks of his mitzvot. They're near to you. They're even in your heart that you can do them. So notice that this isn't a list of expectation, but rather a list of action. Thus, Adonai recognizes a woman through her actions as inspired by her reverence to Adonai. We read of Tamar in Genesis 38, starting in verses 6 and 7. Yehuda took a wife for his son, and her name was Tamar. But Yehuda's first son, firstborn, was evil from Adonai's perspective, so Adonai killed him. And Yehuda's arranging of a marriage for his first son, as we have seen to be the custom throughout Scripture, whereby the eldest is to be married before the other siblings, and thus continues through the order of birth. Unfortunately, Yehuda's first son was anything but righteous, in that Adonai saw him as evil. that Yehuda brought forth his son that was the next in line. Yehuda said to Onan, "Go and sleep with your brother's wife. Perform the duty of a husband's brother to her and preserve your brother's line of descent." Yet Onan refused. In verse 9, Onan knew that the child would not count as his. So whenever he had relations with his brother's wife, he spilled his seed on the ground so as not to give his brother offspring. So his action was intentional. What he did was evil from Adonai's perspective, so he killed him too. Thus Judah made a promise to Tamar in verse 11. He said to her, his daughter-in-law, "Stay a widow in your father's house until my son Shelah grows up." This is the youngest. For he thought, "I don't want him to die too, like his brothers." So Tamar went to live at home with her father. Yet over time, Judah did not follow through on his promise, whereby he would allow his youngest son Shelah to marry Tamar. Gone are her husband, her kinsman redeemer, and also Yehuda's wife. Thus Tamar took action in pursuing, continuing the line of descent, and became pregnant through Yehuda. In verse 26 we read, "Then Yehuda acknowledged owning them, the things that he had given to Tamar. He said, 'She is more righteous than I, because I didn't let her become the wife of my son Shelah.' And he never slept with her again." We read of Rechav, a woman residing in the land of Jericho, and would assume great risk when she would help two of Israel's children. We read in Joshua chapter 2, starting in verse 3, "The king of Jericho sent a message to Rechav, 'Bring out the men who came to you and are staying in your house, because they have come to reconnoiter all the land.' However, the woman, after taking the two men and hiding them, replied, 'Yes, the men did come to me, but I didn't know where they had come from.' Hiding them because of what she had heard about them and their God," in verse 6. "Actually, she had brought them up to the roof and hidden them under some stalks of flax she had spread out there. The men pursued them all the way to the fords of the Jordan. As soon as the pursuit party had left, the gate was shut. The two men had not yet lain down when she returned to the roof and said to them, 'I know that Adonai has given you the land. Fear of you has fallen on us. Everyone in the land is terrified at the thought of you. We've heard how Adonai dried up the water in the Sea of Suf ahead of you when you left Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites on the other side of the Jordan, Shihon and Og, that you completely destroyed them. As soon as we heard it, our hearts failed us. Because of you, everyone is in a state of depression. For Adonai your God, he is God in heaven above and on the earth below.'" These are the words of Rechav. The reputation of Adonai had found its way to Rechav, and with that fear came wisdom, for which Rechav would act upon. In verse 12 of Joshua 2, "So please swear to me by Adonai that since I have been kind to you, you will also be kind to my father's family. Give me some evidence of your good faith, that you will spare the lives of my father, mother, brothers, and sisters, and all who are theirs, so that we won't be killed." The men replied to her, "Our lives are certainly worth yours, provided you don't betray our mission. So when Adonai gives us the land, we will treat you kindly and in good faith." She had been given the word that upon Adonai's action, so long as she kept her word, Rechav would be rewarded for her action of protection. Upon Israel's victory in defeating Jericho and thus taking control of the city, we read in Joshua 6, Joshua said to the two men who had reconnoitered the land, "Go into the prostitute's house and bring the woman out with all that she has, as you swore to her." The young men, the spies, went in and brought out Rechav with her father, mother, brothers, and all she had. They brought out all her relatives and put them safely outside the camp of Israel. Then they burned the city to ashes with everything in it, except for the silver, the gold, the brass, the iron utensils, which they put in the treasury of the house of Adonai. But Joshua spared Rechav, the prostitute, her father's household, and everything she had. And she has continued living with Israel from then until now, because she hid the messengers Joshua had sent to reconnoiter Jericho. We next read of Ruth, a woman of Moab, who was married to Naomi's son for about 10 years. In the book of Ruth, we read of Elimelech, Naomi's husband, having died. And she was left, she and her two sons. They took wives for themselves from the women of Moab. The name of one was Orpah, the other one was named Ruth. They lived there for about 10 years. Then Mahlon and Chilion died, both of them, and the woman was left with neither her two sons nor her husband. So both her husband and her kinsman redeemer were dead. Thus Ruth was without one to continue the line of Naomi's son. Thus, with nothing to keep Naomi in Moab, she was going to return to her home in Bethlehem, and thus encourage her daughter-in-laws to return to their mother's home so that they may marry again. We read in Ruth, in verse 6 of chapter 1, "So she prepared to return with her daughter-in-laws from the plains of Moab, for in the plains of Moab she had heard how Adonai had paid attention to his people by giving them food. She left the places where she was with the two daughters-in-law and took the road leading back to Judah. Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, 'Each of you go back to your mother's home. May Adonai show grace to you, as you did to those who died and to me. May Adonai grant you security in the home of a new husband.' Then she kissed them, but they began weeping aloud. They said to her, 'No, we want to return with you to your people.' Naomi said, 'Go back, my daughters. Why do you want to go with me? Do I still have sons in my womb who could become your husbands? Go back, my daughters, go your way, for I'm too old to have a husband. Even if I were to say, I still have hope, even if I had a husband tonight and bore sons, would you wait for them until they grew up? Would you refuse to marry just for them? No, my daughters, on your behalf, I feel very bitter that the hand of Adonai has gone out against you.' Thus giving them every reason to go, Orpah finally concedes. Again they wept aloud. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth stuck with her. She said, 'Look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her God. Go back after your sister-in-law.' Yet Ruth remained steadfast. 'Don't press me to leave you and stop following you,' she said. 'For wherever you go, I will go, and wherever you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May Adonai bring terrible curses on me and worse ones as well, if anything but death separates you and me. When Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more to her. Thus I am reminded of the same determination by Adonai, as Shaul conveys in Romans chapter 8. For I am convinced that neither death nor life, neither angels nor other heavenly rulers, neither what exists nor what is coming, neither powers above nor powers below, nor any other created things will be able to separate us from the love of God, which comes to us through Messiah Yeshua our Lord. I believe it was that steadfast determination that Ruth experienced in staying with her mother-in-law. And thus, through this steadfastness, Ruth would be introduced to Boaz, who would become her kinsman redeemer, and thus the line of Naomi's family would continue. We read what transpired in chapter 4. In verse 1, meanwhile, Boaz had gone up to the gate and had sat down there, when the Redeemer of whom Boaz had spoken passed by. He said, "Come over and sit down." So he came over and sat down. And thus explains what transpires afterwards. Then he said to the redeeming kinsman, "The parcel of land which used to belong to our relative Elimelech is being offered for sale by Naomi, who has returned from the plains of Moab. I thought I should tell you about it and say, buy, B-U-Y, buy it in the presence of the people sitting here and in the presence of the leaders of my people. If you want to redeem it, redeem it. But if it is not to be redeemed, then tell me so that I can know, because there is no one else in line to redeem it. And I'm after you." He said, "I want to redeem it." Then Boaz said, "The same day you buy the field from Naomi, you must also buy Ruth the woman from Moab, the wife of the deceased son, in order to raise up in the name of the deceased an heir for his property." So basically, this may sound cold in nature, but there's a lineage associated with the people in the land because it's an inheritance. So basically, Naomi is selling her inheritance, and someone who buys it is now responsible for those of Naomi's line. So the line will continue in her name or the name of her family. But someone has to intercede in order to do that. The Redeemer said, verse 6, "Then I can't redeem it for myself, because I might put my own inheritance at risk. You take my right of redemption on yourself, because I can't redeem it." So what's the Redeemer thinking? What's the risk? The firstborn will belong to Naomi's son. Is there a risk that if he marries someone else, there's no additional lineage for him? So there's a risk for a kinsman redeemer here. And thus the Redeemer responded to Boaz. So the Redeemer said to Boaz, "Buy it for yourself," and took off his shoe. And thus Boaz responded to the people, "You are witnesses today that I am purchasing from Naomi all that belonged to her husband and all that belonged to her sons. Also, I am acquiring as my wife Ruth, the woman from Moab, the wife of Mahlon, in order to raise up in the name of the deceased an heir for his property, so that the name of the deceased will not be cut off from his kinsmen and from the gate of his place. You are witnesses today," he says. All the people at the gate and the leaders said, "We are witnesses. May Adonai make the woman who has come into your house like Rachel and like Leah, who between them built up the house of Israel. Do worthy deeds in Ephrat, become renowned in Bethlehem. So the people are blessing this marriage. They're blessing this union. Be like Rachel and Leah. May your house, because of the seed of Adonai, will give you from this young woman, become like the house of Peretz, whom Tamar bore to Judah. We just talked about Tamar earlier. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. Adonai enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. So the redemption of the line of Naomi's sons and her husband has been completed. And thus Ruth, like Tamar, became part of the line of Judah. Then there was Bathsheba, whose relationship with David did not start off as you would want it to, in that she was another man's wife. She was the wife of Uriah the Hittite. And needless to say, what transpired would end in death, having conceived a child. For in 2 Samuel chapter 12, verse 18, on the seventh day the child died. The servants of David were afraid to tell him that the child was dead because, they said, while the child was still alive, we spoke to him, and he didn't listen to us. If we tell him now that the child is dead, he may do himself some harm. But when David saw the servants whispering to each other, he suspected that the child was dead. David asked his servants, "Is the child dead?" And they answered, "He is." Then David got up off the ground, washed, anointed himself, and changed his clothes. He went into the house of Adonai and worshipped. Then he went to his own place, and when he asked for food, they served it to him, and he ate. Yet this is not the end of the story or the relationship between David and Bathsheba. For we learned of David's repentance for his actions towards Uriah, and thus involving Bathsheba in verses 7 through 14. Nathan said to David, the prophet confronted the king, "You are the man that he spoke of. Here is what Adonai, the God of Israel, says. I anointed you king over Israel. I rescued you from the power of Shaul. I gave you your master's house and your master's wives to embrace. I gave you the house of Israel and the house of Judah. And if you had been too little, I would have added to you a lot more. So why have you shown such contempt for the word of Adonai and done what I see as evil? You murdered Uriah the Hittite with the sword and took his wife as your own wife. You put him to death with the sword of the people of Ammon. Now, therefore, the sword will never leave your house because you have shown contempt for me and taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite as your own. Here is what Adonai says. I will generate evil against you out of your own household. I will take your wives before your very eyes and give them to your neighbor. He will go to bed with their wives. Everyone will know about it. For you did it secretly, but I will do this before all Israel in broad daylight. David said to Nathan, I have sinned against Adonai. Nathan said to David, Adonai also has taken away your sin. You will not die. However, because by this act you have so greatly blasphemed Adonai, the child born to you must die. So her husband is dead, and now her child too, having died, Bathsheba remained with David, and thus, through that commitment, Adonai would bless them with another child. David comforted his wife Bathsheba, came to her and went in. She gave birth to a son, and they named him Solomon. Adonai loved him and sent through Nathan the prophet to have him named Yediah, which means loved by God. for it would not be through the other children of David that Adonai would continue the line of Judah, but through this child. For Tamar, it was through her action in pursuing the line of succession for Judah, that which Adonai would come to honor through the line of Messiah, that she is honored. It was through her action that the line of Messiah would continue. For Rechav, it was through her action in protecting and thus keeping her word that Adonai would come to honor her through the line of Messiah. For Ruth, it was through her action to remain with Naomi and thus her people that Adonai would come to honor her through the line of Messiah. All women, all Gentile women, Gentile women whose reputation on the surface did not appear to be righteous. Yet as Adonai sees the heart, he honored them for their action. In their own ways, each was a Proverb 31 woman. For let me remind you of verse 30. Charm can lie, beauty can vanish, but a woman who fears Adonai should be praised. Tamar, Rechav, Ruth, and Bathsheba, women, especially those being born as Gentiles, were rarely included in biblical genealogies that we read in Matthew chapter 1. The first four Gentile women whom God honored by including them among the recorded ancestors of Yeshua, that he would reveal as Messiah, through whom Gentiles, women, and slaves are saved equally with Jews, men, and free person, or the non-slave. Thus, you are not defined by what you do, but rather by how Adonai has created you and what he has created you to be. It is through what you do that honors Adonai. Honor him, and he will honor you. I want to conclude with a writing by whom I believe the author, her name is Eva Hussein. When God created woman, he was working late on the sixth day. An angel came by and asked, "Why spend so much time on her?" The Lord answered, "Have you seen all the specifications I have to meet to shape her? She must function in all kinds of situations, cure herself when sick, and have the ability to work 18 hours a day. She must be able to embrace several kids at the same time, have a hug that can heal anything, from a bruised knee to a broken heart, and she must do all this with only two hands." The angel was impressed. Just two hands? Impossible. "And this is the standard model?" he asked. The angel came closer and touched the woman. "But you have made her so soft, Lord." "She is soft," said the Lord, "but I have made her strong. You can't imagine what she can endure and overcome." "Can she think?" the angel asked. The Lord answered, "Not only can she think, she can also reason and negotiate." The angel touched her cheeks. "Lord, it seems this creation is leaking. You have put too many burdens on her." "She's not leaking. It is a tear," the Lord corrected the angel. "What is it for?" asked the angel. The Lord said, "Tears are her way of expressing her grief, her doubts, her love, her loneliness, her suffering, and her pride." This made a big impression on the angel. "Lord, you are a genius. You thought of everything. A woman is indeed marvelous." The Lord agreed, "Truly she is. She has the strength to amaze a man. She can handle trouble and carry heavy burdens. She holds happiness, love, and opinions. She smiles when she feels like screaming. She sings when she feels like crying, cries when she's happy, and laughs when she's afraid. If this is not the definition of what confuses a man, I don't know what is. The angel asked, "So she is a perfect being?" The Lord replied, "No, she has just one drawback. She often forgets what she is worth." So today and every day, know that you are honored by Adonai in doing what you do to honor him. He created you to be who you are. For you are his work, his craftsman, his creation. Don't lose sight of that. Whatever the world does to beat you down, remember that you are his creation. You are created in his image and likeness, which means there's a little bit of man in you too. So keep this in mind. That mother, woman, wife are not words to be canceled. They're not words that are demeaning. They're not words that are suggestive of being supremacist or anything like that. But they are words establishing identity that God established. He made them male and female. And as this, I don't know if I call it a sonnet or a little, it's too short for a short story. It's not really a poem, but it captivates, even though it's not scriptural, the essence that you are, the reality that you should embrace, that you should never be ashamed of. So on this day that we honor women who are mothers and women who are not mothers but are motherly or have the mothering instinct that resides within them because God created you with it. Don't ever discount yourself. Don't ever deny yourself of who you are. And don't let anyone ever tell you otherwise. So if everybody will please rise.